Welcome to TSF Life, a podcast ministry of the Shepherd's Fellowship Church in Marion, Ohio. TSF Life is designed to bring you biblical teaching in a relational way that's easy to apply to your life. Let's join Pastor Tom Hypes as we dive into today's teaching.
All right, we're getting back into Advent. Looking around, I think most of you guys are plugged in with us and have a general feel of what's going on Advent-wise, but Advent is the 4 Sundays before Christmas. We focus in on the attributes of Christmas to kind of help us stay plugged in all month long in the middle of all the craziness and all the shopping and maybe events that you have going, or even just the loneliness that you might be going through, that there's a lot of things that can kind of distract us from the Christmas celebration, and at the last minute we try to snap into it. I don't do that very well. I do better by having these times with you throughout the month to be able to prepare our hearts for the celebration of Jesus Christ. And so we're going through our different talks. Last week, the candle that we lit was for what? Anybody remember what last week was? Hope. Good job. It gets harder as we go. Okay, hope. And when we talked about hope last week, if you weren't with us, we had a couple of ladies with us that we were a small part of helping go to South Africa this past summer, the same place that I went the summer before. And in the testimony, and as we talked about dumpster villages. These villages in South Africa where they literally just live in landfills, and they pop up whatever sheets of metal they can find to turn into a house, and being there in the broken glass and the poverty, and that made people talk about being how overwhelming it can be. But that I shared when I was there last, and again, hopefully, prayfully, it looks good that I'll be there next summer. That it's also a very hopeful place, in my view, that when you have all the stuff of this life stripped away, then you really see what matters, and saw a lot of hope there, saw a lot of love there, saw families coming together and depending on God in ways that you and I should, but oftentimes we get distracted from. But I invited you for that hope aspect. Is what was your dumpster village? What are you going through? It's probably not going to compare to what these kids are going through in South Africa, but what are you going through that's challenging, that's overwhelming? This week we're going to talk about peace, as we just saw in the video. And instead of talking about dumpster village, I want to talk to you about war zones. And when it comes to war zones, I think in this culture today, we're more familiar with war zones than maybe in the past. Like when I was a kid, like we might talk about Vietnam, or we might talk about World War II, but it was kind of war zones were kind of more of history class to a certain extent. But today, I think we're almost overly comfortable hearing about war zones because it's everywhere, it's constant. I think we've become desensitized to it to a certain extent. Just having fun with AI, I was asking, I don't know who, I think it was just Google, what war zones are active today? Just for example, Israel, Gaza, Syria, Yemen, Iraq, Sudan, Central Africa Republic, Myanmar, Nigeria, especially for Christians right now. If you've not been paying attention, there's horrible persecution against Christians in Nigeria right now. Last Sunday, a church was surrounded by militants, and the pastor and his wife and about 25 other people in the church were taken and have not been found yet. About 2 weeks before that, as you and I were getting ready for Thanksgiving, there was a Catholic school that was surrounded, and over 250 students and about 50 teachers were all taken, and only 50 of those escaped about a week later together, but the rest they've not been able to find. They're now hiring local hunters to go out into their areas to try to figure out where the militants took them. It's just been a hotbed. It's been a horrible situation. Afghanistan, Haiti, Mexico. While I was putting this together, one of the first things, like on my phone, I have like news things that come through. And a news thing came up while I was working on this. It said a Russian drone bombed a Christian school in Ukraine, even as peace talks continue. I mean, war zones are just a constant part of our world right now. And so I was like, okay, so if we're going to talk about that aspect of things, what is a war zone? I wanted to have somewhat of a definition for us to be able to work with. And if I say something and I assume it went up and it did not, please give me a heads up, because I'm not going to around on all of them. But war zones are a region with active conflict, marked with danger, violence, and significant risk. That's the definition we're going to use for war zones today. A region with active conflict marked with danger, violence, and significant risk. So my question this week, if it's not going to be what is your dumpster village, take a second and bring to the table what's your war zone. Again, it's not going to compare to some of the other examples I've given, but I'm convinced that many of us have areas that are actively have conflict in them, are marked with danger, marked with violence, and significant risk, emotionally, spiritually, physically, whatever across the board. What is your war zone that you're going to bring to the table, and we're going to find out how we can have peace in the middle of those war zones. Does that make sense? So we're just kind of doing it for, now, your war zone could be the exact same place as your dumpster village last week. I'm not saying that it can't be, but it is a little bit of a different angle, so you might have some different thoughts into that. And then we'll do what we have been doing, or did last week. I want to talk to you about a hero of our faith. We'll dig into a testimony. And we're going to look at Ruth and Naomi's testimonies to be able to look at their war zone, how God led them through that, and what you can pull from it. So, get your Bibles out. Go on to Ruth chapter 1 if you need it. Again, the Bible's in the baskets underneath the chairs around the room. And then your version should be up and running. I always check with Brent. Thank you, Brent. I check with you so much they might think that, like, you're in charge of putting that together. He's not. He's just the fastest at the draw. So, and he's busted me out a couple times. But if you don't know the story of Ruth and Naomi, you will today. We're going to primarily focus on Ruth for the first two-thirds of it, and I'll bring Naomi in on it as well. But it's a book in the Old Testament. It's just, I think, four chapters long, if I remember correctly. And I think it's just a great, great story when it talks about going through seasons like this. So we're going to read a little, talk a little, read a little, talk a little, read a little, talk a little. Yeah, okay. Cheap, 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 talk a lot, pick a little more. For those of us who had Mr. McGree as our junior high choir director, who remember that song well. Okay, so let's, what? Is it in the Music Man? I don't know, Mr. McGree brought it to me, huh? No, I'm not going to make that joke. Okay, start now, chapter 1, verse 1, let's see where this ends up taking us. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man at Bethlehem in Judea went to sojourn into the country of Moab, and his wife and his two sons. The man, the name of the man was Eli, we'll say, and the name of the wife was Naomi, and the names of the two sons were Mahalon and Chilion. Sure. They were from Bethlehem in Judea. They went into the country of Moab, and they remained there. But Eli, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons. These took Moab wives. The name of one was Orpah, and the name of the other was Ruth. They lived there for about 10 years, and both Mahlon and Chilion died, so that the woman was left without her two sons and her husband. Okay, so let's define out their particular war zone situation that would meet our definition. Active conflict, marked with danger, violence, significant risk. Everything starts out fine. It's a nice little family that's of Israelites that are in Jerusalem. And then a famine hits, completely outside their control, right? And so there's people starving. There's a lot of struggle. There's a lot of poverty. And so the husband of this family, who is the provider and the protector of the family, decides we are going to move. We are going to leave this region and go into a foreign area. So this is a map that takes you from, I'm sorry, I said Jerusalem earlier, I meant Bethlehem. Bethlehem, up around the Dead Sea and down into Moab. And I got to playing with this a little bit because I kind of wanted to be curious, like, what was that from a war zone standpoint? And it's about 50, let's see, make sure I get this right. I don't want to lie to you guys. 50-mile walk, so it'd take anywhere from a week to a week and a half to walk. It's a very rocky terrain. You have to be able to cross the sea at the top there. And then there's also within this, and I think this is cool, an area called the Ascent of Ziz. Okay, if you want to write that down, Ascent of Ziz. Yep. So I'm going to fight this thing again this week. We'll see what happens. But the it's interesting because it's rocky and it's terrainy and it fits our war zone mentality of all what this family had to go through. But it's also an area made famous in 2 Chronicles 2016, if you want that reference. 2 Chronicles 2016. where there was a famous battle here, and because of that famous battle, this area is known to symbolize God's ability to deliver his people from overwhelming odds. That's what that place is known as. It's a representation of God's ability to deliver his people from overwhelming odds. And I love those kind of nuggets when you get into the scripture. Like, it'd be real easy to go, oh, I wonder how far, oh, it's like, okay, 50. But like, when you look at the ascent and you look at the terrain and you look at the struggle that he went through for his family's sake, and that all of it was representing the God's goddess, really, really stands out to me. So I love that aspect of it. So they make the journey, they get through the journey, and then they're living there for a period of time, and then dad dies. So Eli is no more. Now, that means the father of the family, again, you have to remember their culture, not our culture, is now gone. And so all the responsibility does not go to Naomi, it goes to the boys. And the boys are young. We see that they're not of marrying age yet. If I died in a horrible car crash tomorrow, Jenny would celebrate the life insurance money that she gets, big party at the Hypes household. But then she's pretty much in charge of the household. That's not the case here. She's a woman, many consider property. She has no way of providing. There's no real jobs that she can do that's going to be anything lucrative in any way, shape, or form. And she has no way of protection. She's actually quite vulnerable within the culture now because people are looking at taking advantage of people or robbing from people. She has no protection over her. It's a really challenging part of the war zone that she's going to be in. And so the boys are now the heads of the households. So now they got a place of transition. They're not ready for it. Again, they're young. They're more than likely going to be somewhere in their early teens. And everything is upside down. Then Ruth steps into the war zone. They're in this foreign land. They're away from their God. All this stuff's going on. And they both get married to a woman from Moab, which is allowed in the law. They're allowed, when it comes to Moab women, they can marry Moab women. But it's not highly celebrated. Which isn't too bad when you live in Moab, because Moab doesn't really care about those type of things. But if I was an Israelite and I married a Moab woman, she is not allowed to be in the community of God. So she can be my wife, I'm not forbidden, but she's still a foreigner, she's not allowed to be in the community of God. A matter of fact, if we have children, and so they're now 50-50, right, they're not allowed to be in the community of God. If those kids have kids, they're not allowed to be in the community of God. It takes 10 generations to remove that from somebody from a Moab aspect who married into the Israelites before they could be in the community of God. So this isn't normal, but I really want you to have that fact because it's unbelievably cool here in a few minutes too. It's unbelievably cool what God does with that. So anyways, so they marry these women and then they die. So within 10 years, so what, these ladies are probably late 20s at the most. Naomi's in her middle age. And so they're now outsiders of their own people. They're now outsiders of the Israelites. They have no protection. They have no provision. They have no men in the family. And they have no hope. No hope whatsoever. So after a while, a period of time, Naomi understands the hopelessness of it. And in verse 6, this is what tells us happens. She rose with her daughters-in-law to return from the country of Moab because she's heard that the fields of Moab, that the Lord has visited his people and Bethlehem's okay again and has given them food. So she set out from the place where she was with her two daughters-in-law and they went on their way to return to the land of Judah. So everything we just looked at in the map going reverse. Okay, so we're still going back through that region of where God's ability to deliver his people. Naomi, however, says to her two daughters-in-law, go, return to your mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant you that you may find rest, each of you in your own house of your husband. And she kissed them, and she lifted up her voices and wept. And they said to her, no, we will return with you to your people. Both women said that. But Naomi said, turn back, my daughters. Why would you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that you may make your husbands? Because that would be the only way they could be redeemed. She says, turn back, my daughters. Go your way, because I'm too old to have a husband. And if I should say I have hope, even if I should have a husband this night and should bear sons, would you therefore wait until they're grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it is exceedingly bitter to me for your sake, that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. Then they lifted up their voices and wept again. Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, and Ruth clung to her. And she said, see, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. But Ruth said, do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. For where you go, I will go. And where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people will be my people, and your God is my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death departs me from you. And when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more. So the two of them went on, came back to Bethlehem. And when they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the woman said, is this Naomi? And she said to them, do not call me Naomi. Call me Mara, for the Almighty God has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? When the Lord has testified against me, and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me. So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, with her, who returned to the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. Anybody want to argue that this is not a war zone situation for them at this point? There's no hope. There's desperation. There's challenge. There's abandonment. Naomi has nothing left for Ruth, but Ruth says, I'm still here. I don't blame Orpah, do you? I mean, she can still, according from a worldly standpoint, from a logical standpoint, she can go back to her people, to her gods. She can still get married again. She can still have a life. All that Naomi is giving her is hopelessness. So she goes. We understand that. A lot of us taking go worldly routes as well that make a lot of sense because we want a shortcut and we want to be able to control the answers to our problems. However, we see Ruth is acting in a very different way, that we'll see very different results. I don't believe we ever hear of Orpah again, if I remember correctly. We never hear back on her in any way, shape, or form. So these four ladies, they're taken and just prepared themselves to be married, take care of their husbands, take care of their kids, be the house, didn't exactly work out that way, and now they're trying to survive. Here's how bad this situation is. When you go into two, Ruth and I didn't button these things. Do you notice that? There we go. When you get into chapter two, and I invite you to read all of this later, please, there is a very sad story. The only thing that they can do is what's called gleaming the fields. And gleaming the fields, you have to understand, is a wave after wave promise. So if I owned a field, I would have men that I hire to go out and glean the field. And they would go out and their charge would get the best of the best. But don't take 16 years across this field, but get the very best of it. And then I have women that I hire and they follow the men and they get what's left behind them. Then it continues in waves until it gets down to the beggars. And the beggars have nothing left but what's just like laying on the ground. It's the little morsels or whatnot. And the woman beggars can have whatever's left because we don't need that anyways. That is not such a humiliating position, but a dangerous one. Well, we're going back to talking about the protection aspect of things. You are the weakest of the group. So if someone's going to steal, rob, or beat, it's going to be the people back here that everybody else is ignoring and have no attention to, and it's very common for the women who are beggars to be raped. It's not just a, gosh, I got a day job and I'm getting minimum wage. It's a very dangerous thing that she is doing. So she goes to a field, it's Boaz's, which is a relative of Naomi. I think they're still kind of putting together some of the thoughts on that. But she was going, and as she's taking him, picking up what she could, Boaz notices her, and he says, who does she belong to? It's not like, hey, who is that? It's just, who does that belong to? Whose slave is that? Whose wife is that? Why is she out in the field? He's curious about what's going on. They're like, oh, well, that's Naomi's daughter-in-law, and Naomi's a relative of yours, and this is the situation. She asked, and we told her it was okay. Go through it. And he just took hold on her. He took hold on her because he had heard about all the faithfulness that she had done towards God and towards Naomi. Don't miss that part. It's not just like, oh, she's a cute young lady. You are faithful, and I want you to be lifted up. So he goes to her and says, listen, here's my deal. You can glean my fields, but only glean my fields. Don't go to any others. Just stay in my fields. And move up to my female workers. So it's no longer just picking off. She's now in second row. And I promise you, I've told all my men, if they touch you, they're dead. No, none of my men are going to, yeah, you are fully under my protection. And so she is completely overwhelmed by this, and she's got this protection and this provision, and things are going well. And then verse 10 of chapter 2, it says that when he takes and says these things to her, she falls on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me since I'm a foreigner?" But Boaz answered her, "All that you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, and how you left your father and mother in your native land and came to a people that you did not know. The Lord will repay you for what you have done, and a full reward will be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Then she said, "I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants." And then there's this meal, and Boaz invites her to come to it, so he's still taking care of her. And he gives her bread, gives her the food, and he has wine. And it seems that, like, he's kind of contemplating all her faithfulness and what his opportunity is. And he says to her, you know what? I want you to actually glean amongst the really good stuff. He takes up, bumps up again. And so she goes that night, she does the gleaming, and she comes home with, like, this incredible bounty that they could never imagine. Doesn't God do that sometimes? It's called bounty. And Naomi looks at her and goes, "Girl, what in the world happened? How is this even possible?" So she tells him about Boaz, and she talks to him about everything that has happened. So Naomi starts coming up with a plan, because women are usually smarter than men. Verse 20. You guys are like, yeah, that makes sense. Verse 20, Naomi says to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed by the Lord, Boaz, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." And Naomi also said to her, "The man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers." Make sure you get that phrase, one of our redeemers. And Ruth the Moabite says, "Besides, he said to me, you shall keep close by the young man until they have finished all the harvest." And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young woman, lest in another field you be assaulted." So she kept close to the young woman of Boaz, gleaning until the end of the barley and wheat seasons. And she lived with the mother-in-law. So as she's watching these things, and the things are coming into place, Naomi hatches a plan, because here is a redeemer. And when I'm talking about a redeemer, that is a very specific term used in the law, where a family member, certain family members, have certain opportunities and obligations to other certain types of family members. So in this case, because of his position within the family, if he marries Ruth, she'll be redeemed. And so will Naomi, and they'll be under his protection, they'll be under his provision, and he has the opportunity to do that. And so Naomi's aware of that. Some other things, just if you're interested, if I am your redeemer or guardian redeemer, sometimes how it's referred to in some translations as well, if my brother is killed and he's murdered, I have the right to avenge his death as a redeemer. If my brother has a wife and she's childless and he dies, I can marry the wife and redeem her into our family. I can buy back family land. If somebody's being foolish and I want their family land back, I have the legal right to do that. I can buy back family members who fall into slavery. And then also I have the obligation and opportunity to look after needy and helpless family, to be the redeemer. Boaz is who Naomi is looking at to be that redeemer. So she comes up with a plan. She's pretty smart. This is going to be in chapter 3, where she says, "Listen, there's a dinner coming up, and Boaz is known to be an eater and drinker. He's not like this elusive drunk, but he likes to, he takes in and celebrates the harvest. And so you go to that and just kind of hang out. And then more than likely, it's kind of his habit that he realizes he had too much and someone has taken the keys away from him. So instead of going home, he's going to go into the threshing floor and he will probably lay down in there and go to sleep. And this is what I want you to do." And so Ruth followed it to the T. She is right. He goes in, he lays down, crashes out. It's going to stay there for the night. Ruth sneaks in, making sure that no one sees her. not because she's unscrupulous, but because they don't need to start a gossip rumor of what's not true. Then she goes in, and do you guys remember this? It kind of sounds so odd when you first hear it. She uncovers his feet, takes his sandals off, moves his robe up, and then she lays down at his feet and goes to sleep as well. The reason it sounds weird is because we're not used to the customs. This is, at that time, a way that a woman, who usually doesn't have much say at all, can say to a man, if you want to marry me, I'm in. I will be in submission to you. That's what the sign is. So he wakes up in the middle of the night, and all of a sudden there's a woman down there, and he can't figure out who it is, and says, basically proposing marriage. His response is, who are you? Who are you? Chapter 3, verse 9. She answers, I am Ruth, your servant. Spread your wings over your servant, because you are a redeemer. And he said, may you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter. You have made the last kindness greater than the first one, that you did not go after young men, whether poor or rich. Again, he's older. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you what you ask, for all my fellow townsmen know that you are a worthy woman. Again, it's about the faithfulness. And now it is true that I am a redeemer, yet there's another redeemer closer than me. Remain tonight and in the morning. If he will redeem you, good, let him do it. But if he is not willing to redeem you, then as the Lord lives, I will redeem you. Lie down until the morning. So he's all in, but there's a problem that's introduced here. He's not the closest redeemer. There's somebody else that has a right before him. So he goes out and he connects all the elders. He goes, I want you guys to be witnesses. And him and I are going to have a conversation. And as a faithful man himself, he doesn't say, hey, I want this woman. We've got to do what we'll do. He says, it is your right to redeem Eli's property. Do you want that property? If not, I'll take it, but do you want that property? And he goes, yeah, I think I want that land. Yeah, I think I want that. He goes, okay, that sounds great. But with that, you also get this woman, Ruth. You have to redeem all of his property. So you have to get married to him, too. And he's like, ooh, I don't think I want a wife. No, I think I'll pass on it. You take it. You take it. It's all yours. And so, sure enough, he falls into place, and he becomes the redeemer and decides to be faithful to God and to her by bringing them in. So, chapter 4, verse 13. Boaz took Ruth and became his wife. And he went into her, and the Lord gave conception, and she bore a son. Then the woman said to Naomi, blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a redeemer. And may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be your restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you, who is more than you than seven sons, she's greater than seven sons that you could have had, she's given birth to him. Naomi took the child, laid him on her lap, and became his nurse. And the woman of the neighborhood took and gave him a name, saying, a son has been born to Naomi. And they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. And so, again, we have redemption, we have where things come into place, and we have a reason for the peace, right? So let me just go through some bullet points, and then I'll try to bring my main point together. Okay, note takers, you ready? Oh, I hope these work. I'm just going to have to turn around. First off, we all have our own struggles. I'm going to go a little bit faster. You can get this in the workshop later if you need to. Another thing we see here is that if we lean into God's way, we have Ruth and Naomi both leaning into faithfulness, and that difference comes into place when it comes to peace. God moves where you can't, which we're going to see again as testified by the mountain that they go through and all the different things called in place and what field they end up with and Boaz's righteousness and his judgment. Those are things that he could not have imagined when she was going out there for the first time, afraid that she would be raped or injured. In your peace faithfulness, God positions you. Yeah, we see that in there. In your peace faithfulness, others notice. We see that again in Boaz and all the women of the community and all those. I think even, I'd be curious what happened with Orpah when she goes back to Moab and tells a story, what kind of stories came out of that. Attacks come against peace. We see that within there as well. And then, messed up. It's supposed to be peace leads to a godly legacy. Peace leads to a godly legacy, which we see as we go from Ruth's hopelessness into David, who is the Redeemer. And then later, we see that the Redeemer of a baby boy named Jesus Christ is born through his lineage. That list, anything stand out to you about that list? Concept of Redeemer. And we're going to dig into that more. No? Nobody? It's last week's list. I just changed hope to peace, except I forgot the last line. The exact same principles that we lean into for hope is what we do in peace. The exact same principles we see in the story of Daniel, the exact same principles we see in the story of Ruth. Now, I will add a couple into there, things that I think are really important to know. I am not saying that Ruth had peace at the end of this because the circumstances changed. Circumstances have nothing to do with peace. I see peace in Naomi and Ruth in their faithfulness and in their decisions and in their cunning all the way through the story, because peace is not the result of the circumstances. Peace is the companion on our journey. So we can't count on circumstances in any way, shape, or form. They didn't. We don't see that bringing peace to it. Here's what I see. Now, I'm sure there's a billion other points out there too, but what stands out to me is that peace is secure when you're protected and you're provided for. It's natural. Peace is there when you're protected for and provided for. Do you truly believe that God is your protection and has your back? Do you truly believe that He will provide for any of the struggles that you're talking about in your war zone, or even if you want to go back to your dumpster village? If you know you are protected and provided for, in any possible mindset, why would you have fear, anxiety, or stress, worried about the war zone situation, when you know that your Redeemer has redeemed you and it's done? Done. That's what we see in Ruth's life. It's what we see in Naomi's life. With Naomi, if you look at it from her standpoint, I mean, I think there's even more story there when it comes to Naomi, because she was at the original start of the war zone and all the way through it, had probably, I think, experienced the most loss within this story. She goes from chapter 2 of saying, just walk away from me because there was nothing here. Don't even call me a Naomi. Call me abandoned by God. To go from that point to sitting there with the baby, her Redeemer, who now will be the one to protect her and take care of her for the rest of her life, now that this has been redeemed, and she prays and she worships her God. You see her move within that, even in the most hopeless times, knowing that I've got to go back, I've got to trust God, I've got to get to my people, there's got to be something. And then she sees her Redeemer. A Redeemer who comes from a mom who their children for 10 generations can't have anything to do with the Christian community. But yet in 3 generations, there's David, who is the Savior and the King of God's community. Within a few more generations is Jesus. It's not just about Obed, but it's about Christ, who we're getting ready to celebrate, being born to come to be our Redeemer, our protection, and our provision. And when we hold on to that, the war zone has no control over us anymore. It's just something we navigate. It's just something He leads us through. Does that make sense? And so if we keep that as we're going into this month and we go into just our normal lives, what incredible, incredible situations that we find ourselves in. I love this with Naomi. Naomi taking the child, and they're taking, Naomi has a son. Ruth had a kid. But Naomi has a Redeemer. Tom has a Redeemer. I have Christ.
If you were blessed by today's teaching, we hope you return for our next podcast. Or, better yet, stop by the Shepherd's Fellowship any Sunday morning to join us live. You can learn more about the church by calling 740-382-3500. Or check us out online by going to tsflife.com. That's tsflife.com. You can also support the ministry of TSF Life by donating at our church website, or sending support to the Shepherd's Fellowship, 1647 Marion, Marysville Road, Marion, Ohio, 43302. Thank you for spending your time with us today, and we look forward to seeing you soon. Be blessed.